When equipment breaks down and operations come to a halt, every single second counts. So why is your maintenance team spending 60% of their time doing anything but turning wrenches? Maintain X is the AI-powered maintenance and asset management system that helps your team get back to actually fixing breakdowns. No more searching for manuals. No more hunting down parts. No more drowning in paperwork. With Maintain X, your team can access manuals from anywhere, create new procedures in minutes, and turn voice notes into clear and complete work order feedback. What used to take hours now only takes minutes. Keep your operations moving and your wrenches turning. Join over 13,000 maintenance teams that are already fixing more and filing less. Try Maintain X for free today. Go to maintainx.com/AI. That's maintain in the letter x.com/AI.
I'm Serena Williams, and I'm healthier on Row. I've lost 34 pounds in a year with GLP-1s, diet, and exercise. On Row, you can access GLP-1 options, including the first FDA-approved GLP-1 pill for weight loss. Go to row.co/journey to see if you qualify. 14 to 20% average weight loss in 1 year in non-diabetics with obesity or overweight with a weight-related medical condition versus 2.2% to 3.1% in placebo arm. Rx only. To stay informed about serious side effects, go to row.co/safety.
When it comes to my policy, Farmers gives it to me straight, so there's no surprises.
It's your coverage. You should never be confused.
You hear that? An insurance provider with a conscience.
We're a choir, but yes, we have that too.
Straightforward coverage you can literally understand. That's what you get when
you have Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Learn more at farmers.com. Underwritten by Farmers Truck or Fire Insurance Exchanges or Affiliate. Products not available in every state.
If we hope to survive in this digital age, we have to think critically about the messages we consume. Someone created those messages for a reason. Let's find out why. Sometimes we just have to ask, what the media? I'm Megan Lynch, an Edward R. Murrow and Gracie Award winner with legacy radio station KMOX in St. Louis, Missouri. I'm joined by Julie Smith, author, instructor, public speaker, and our guide for how to be a savvy media consumer. In our first season, we focused on dissecting messages. This season, transparency from the mouths of the content creators.
You're asking people to let you into their lives, often for years. And to go on a journey with you in which you as the filmmaker hold the cards and the subject often is very vulnerable.
In this episode, documentary films, a big ask. Julie and I talk with AJ Schnock, independent filmmaker, about the difference between movies and the documentaries he's been crafting for the last 20 years.
I would say it's the difference between a documentary or a nonfiction film and a fiction film. I think the biggest examples are that fiction films traditionally use actors playing the roles of someone else. And the situations, there's no rule about that the situations involved have to have any basis in reality. They can be complete fantasy, in fact. Whereas a nonfiction film, you know, you're dealing with real people, real situations, and real events. But I would say that within that world, you know, you're using the same filmmaking tools. You might be using them in different ways, whether you're making a nonfiction film or a feature fiction film.
So when you're dealing with real people, how does that increase the difficulty compared to a fiction film?
Well, you don't get to have them do what you tell them to do. You know, I mean, you don't know where the movie is going a lot of the times. And that's one of the things when you go into it, you may have a sense of I'm making this film and I think this film is going to be X. But I think the better nonfiction filmmakers are willing to go into a situation and be completely surprised and find out, oh, that's not the story that I thought I was coming here to tell is not the story that it is here when I'm actually in this space, in this world. The story is something different, and now I have to figure out how to tell that story. You know, a lot of times, you know, when you tell a film that has happened about events that took place in the past, you're often, you know, have a better sense of like, oh, this is the story because I've done research. I know there are existing interviews with the people who are involved, versus when you're doing a story that's unfolding as you are filming. So the difference between like a historical documentary and a current or verite documentary, what happens can be quite different.
You know, obviously when you were doing the Long Gone Summer for ESPN, I'm sure you were able to capitalize on that to get those interviews. But when you first started trying to do independent films and documentaries, was it hard to convince people to do those interviews with you?
Oh, it's still hard, you know, I mean, because it's asking a lot. You know, it's not like you're saying like, hey, give me 5 minutes, you know, or half an hour, or, you know, I'm doing this story and I want to get your take on it. You know, you're asking people to let you into their lives, often for years, and to go on a journey with you in which you as the filmmaker hold the cards, and the subject often is very vulnerable. So I mean, I always say to people when I'm making the ask that it's a big ask, you know, it's not something minor, and it can often live for a long time, where whether you're a well-known person or someone who's not well-known, the film can come to define your identity for a lot of people. So it's not something to be undertaken lightly, either by the filmmaker or by the subject. So yeah, I mean, certainly there are some people who, if you say like, oh, you know, I'm doing something for Netflix or I'm doing something for ESPN or HBO, like that might get people excited about wanting to participate, but it doesn't change the enormity, I think, of what you're asking.
AJ, what's one thing that would surprise people most about your job? Because your job sounds glamorous, right? You live in Los Angeles, you make films.
I think it's the length of time it takes to make a documentary film. Not all. Some films, you know, people make them in faster turnaround or short periods of time. But, you know, I made a film in Branson, Missouri called We Always Lie to Strangers, and we filmed that over the course of 5 years. You know, and for a lot of that time period, we didn't necessarily know, you know, who our main characters were going to be, you know, what was the story. We went there wanting to tell a certain story about Branson, but we arrived right before the financial collapse that occurred in 2008. And that changed the story. It changed what was happening in Branson. It changed what was happening in the tourism industry. And so that made everything very different than the film that we thought we were going there to make. And a lot of that in terms of like figuring out what the story was didn't even happen until we started editing and realized, you know, kind of the footage we had. One of our main characters in that film, a woman named Alicia, you know, we didn't know she was a main character until we saw the footage. Started watching the footage and started editing the film. And we were like, oh my gosh, she's magical. She's doing something that no one else in the film is doing, and we want her to be a big part of it. So I think there are films that are much more planned out, and you go in and you're just kind of, you know, this is what we're doing, and we just need this puzzle piece to fit with this puzzle piece, and everything will come together. But, you know, a lot of times it takes a long time. You don't necessarily know what you're doing or what you're going to get out of it. And that, of course, I think to me is part of the thrill of doing it.
Tell me about that editing process. What does it take to sift through all the footage and research that you do and put it into a concise package?
I mean, it's both a nightmare and a joy. It's like, you know, it's one of the hardest parts of the filmmaking process, because there are times when you're so lost in it, you think, you know, I'm never going to figure this out. There are times when you think you've got it put together and then you have to pull it all apart. I liken it to deconstructing a car in a garage when you walk in and you can't believe that all the parts once fit into this thing that worked, because you've taken everything out and you put everything in different stacks and piles. And then you have to figure out how to reconstruct it into something smaller, maybe because you need to make the film shorter, or because some piece of the structure isn't working, and how, you know, the second act might be working, but the third act isn't. But then when you fix the third act, the second act doesn't work anymore. It's a very, very difficult process, but it's so, there are moments then when you do something and you're like, oh man, like this all works now. This feels great. And this feels the way, I mean, for me, what I want to do is like, I want you to feel how it felt in the moment, especially if I'm filming something contemporaneous, you know, it's like, there's a feeling that I have. And if I can get you to feel the same way, that's thrilling. So I can sometimes sense that I'm getting there in the edit. And if I feel like I'm getting there or I got there, that's one of the best feelings you can have, I think, as an editor, filmmaker, but it takes forever to get there. It's a nightmare. Don't do it.
AJ, as I listen to you talk, you remind me so much of the way Megan talks about her job of putting stories together in a way that will resonate with an audience. But Megan, you have to edit a lot of your information too and figure out the best way to deliver it. I think it's so interesting that you all are doing very similar things through different media platforms.
I always liken it when I'm doing a series of reports to writing a term paper. That's what it feels like. And sometimes, I don't know about you, AJ, but I get to the end of it and it's kind of like, okay, what did I say here? What was the point of this? All the continual edits, but sometimes when you step away, I wonder if you ever have to step away from it for a few weeks and go back to it just to have a fresh point of view.
Yeah. I mean, in a perfect world, you set it aside and you go away for a while and then come back to it. Because yeah, you can't see it. You can't tell what's working at a certain point. And so that, like, Long Gone Summer is an example. You know, we actually put it aside for about a month and a half over the Christmas holidays from 2019 into 2020. And when I came back, I was just like, I was like, what? I don't even know why we thought this was working. Like this whole piece is like, structurally, you know, just, I can't take it. It's terrible. You have to do that, I think. And allow yourself that time to step away, because otherwise you're just deep in it all the time.
So AJ, you've done documentaries on music. You've done documentaries on politics. You've done documentaries on sports. Have there been major differences in the level of cooperation you've gotten from people?
It's different when you're dealing with well-known people, I think, generally. The political films that I've made, I don't approach it in the same way. If you're a candidate who's running for office, those are, you know, we talk about the differences between documentary and journalism. Those films are the most journalistic of the work that I've done. I treat people who are running for office differently as a subject than I would treat someone who is, letting me film them when they're doing a show in Branson. That process is very different. But I think if you're a well-known person, you know, if you're a Mark McGuire or a Sammy Sosa, you know, you're asking yourself, like, who's this guy? Why is he the one to tell this story? Why is now the moment to tell this story? And so those are the kinds of, you know, you have those kinds of conversations.
So who's the team around you?
My wife has been my producer on a lot of my projects. We've had a production company together for, you know, more than 25 years now. She has a very good sense of what the project was supposed to be. Why was I interested in making that project? And so she can always provide that kind of true north of, you know, like, that's not what you wanted to do, or that's not what you intended to do here. And then I've had a circle of collaborators. Some people work on one project that don't work on another, but, you know, it's like different people over the years who I trust. But, you know, I think ultimately I have to be true to what I felt was the thing that made me want to do it, or the thing that I felt at the time, as I mentioned before. You know, that I have to get to that place. And so I can't always convey that in words to somebody. You know, it's like when you're trying to explain to somebody how to do something, and then you finally just have to push them out of the way and say, like, no, I'm just going to do it, because it takes me longer to explain it to you than if I just did it myself and you can watch. That it's a very similar thing, where I can try to explain to somebody what an intention was or where a place I wanted to get to, but it's ultimately I have to get there. And I have to feel that for me. And sometimes that'll work for other people and sometimes it won't, but it's ultimately, you know, I'm accountable to myself, and I'm accountable to, I feel, my subjects. You know, it's like, that's who I most have to be true to what I told them I was going to do. I can't mislead someone, which I think, you know, again, I talking about the differences between documentary and, you know, what we consider journalism, you know, when you're making a documentary, your relationship with your subject is collaborative, and it is something that is, it is ongoing over a long period of time. And so there's a trust that you ask for from them, and that you have to deliver on. And it is not something you can say like, oh, I'm doing X, and then you don't let them know if it changes. I mean, it's something very, that's an important relationship.
One of the things we've talked about on the podcast is how media have changed through the years. And of course, the pandemic has changed the landscape significantly. What do you see as the future of documentaries?
Well, documentaries have done well this summer relative to other films. The Anthony Bourdain film has made $5 million at the box office, which is not a lot when you look at Black Widow, but it's not that far off of what we would consider huge successes from a few years ago. Same with Summer of Soul. I mean, and there's a Julia Child film that's about to come out. We might be getting back into a place where, you know, people really embrace that part of the theatrical experience of going to a movie and seeing a documentary, especially about someone who they are familiar with or a story that they are super interested in. But streaming has changed everything for sure. I mean, it's not just in terms of the ability of people to find a lot of different types of documentaries and documentary series. That's, you know, something that is much different than it was a decade ago. And so I think that we'll continue to see more of that. It feels like every week we get a new streaming service, and, you know, they're launching with films or with documentary series. But, you know, I think one thing that'll be interesting that I'm interested in watching is some of the joy, and maybe because I've always primarily been an independent filmmaker, you know, some of the joys have been seeing smaller films haven't been backed traditionally by major streamers. I mean, they may get acquired by a streamer if they play at Sundance or Tribeca. But, you know, those kinds of films, those things that really come from a personal desire to tell a specific story, as opposed to, like, you know, some big, you know, biographical portrait. I hope that those kinds of films still have a place, and that people want to seek out those kinds of films, because those are often the most exciting filmmaking that's being done, I think.
You know, you talked the box office numbers. So let's talk some of the bottom line of documentary filmmaking. I don't know that a lot of people, even myself, understand where the money comes from to produce them and how you make money doing this, especially when you're working on a project, for example, for 5 years.
Yeah, if you figure it out, let me know. Because it's I shouldn't say no one's getting rich. Some people are doing quite well, actually. You'll see people whose names come up again and again and seem to, like, you know, always be working on something. You know, there's probably, you know, a couple dozen filmmakers who that's true about. You know, for me, I've always just found people who, you know, have some money lying around that they want to be in the making movie business. You know, documentaries are not as expensive as to make as fiction films. So if you're somebody who wants to get involved in the film business and you like documentaries, it can often be a less costly way to get your foot in. So yeah, I mean, a lot of things I've done have been funded by, you know, by those kinds of people. You know, I've not been somebody who's gotten a lot of grants or pursued a lot of grants, but there are those. People get grants from foundations, from wealthy individuals, from organizations. And then there are people who are funded by, you know, the streaming services and the networks that, that we've been talking about. So there's a variety of ways in which the money comes. But, you know, for a lot of filmmakers, that's just a process of getting the film done. It's not a process that, that really allows you to have, you know, like a huge amount of money coming into you personally.
AJ, when you're talking about putting a documentary together, are you typically approached by someone to make the documentary, or do you get the idea and then pitch it to someone?
There've been a couple of times when I've been approached, but most of the projects I've done have been things that I've generated. In the case of Long Gone Summer, I actually pitched ESPN about a different idea that we all felt ultimately was going to be too cost prohibitive to make. But they were like, you know, keep pitching us. And I just said, well, you know, I'm curious. It seems like there's a reason why you haven't done the 98 home run race. And they were just like, well, you know, if you can, get, Mark and Sammy, then, yeah, let's talk about it. And then I found out that, like, you know, it was something they've always wanted to do. They've just never been able to get those two guys on board. So, you know, that was a process where there was a lot of interest, but I had to be able to put all the pieces together of Major League Baseball and Mark and Sammy and getting Cardinals and Cubs and everybody kind of just to be okay with it.
AJ, I think we've learned quite a bit about the documentary film process, many things that I didn't think about, but I'm really struck at how similar your job and Megan's job is just on the surface about putting stories together and trying to make the audience relate to how you were feeling when you were putting the story together. I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, no, I mean, I went to the J School at Mizzou, and while I think that there are huge differences between the nonfiction filmmaking process and when I was a journalist, there were a lot of things I learned in that process that I use in the same way that I, you know, use the tools of fiction filmmaking. You know, I think it's an interesting process to know, you know, what you learn in journalism and how that does and does not relate, you know, to making a documentary.
That's AJ Schnock, independent filmmaker. One of his most recent projects, Long Gone Summer, an ESPN 30 for 30 documentary about the 1998 Major League Baseball home run record chase. I'm Megan Lynch with media literacy expert Julie Smith. What the Media is produced by Odyssey St. Louis from the studios of KMOX Radio in St. Louis, Missouri. Our executive producer is Beth Coughlin. We invite you to visit KMOX.com for more on our media literacy project.
Your line just went down. Production stopped. A supervisor wants answers. And someone's digging through a binder for the maintenance history. Every one of those minutes costs money. And most of the time, that breakdown could have been prevented. That's where MaintainX comes in. MaintainX catches the failure before it happens. Preventative maintenance plans on every key asset to improve reliability. Work orders assigned and tracked right from your phone. Everyone from the floor to the front office is in the loop. Companies on MaintainX have cut unplanned downtime by over 30% and saved thousands on parts and labor every year. See what MaintainX can do for your operation. Try MaintainX free at MaintainX.com, an Autodesk company.
Girl, let's get real. Some pads are just diapers with a good PR team. but not the new Kotex BioCare. That's because Kotex BioCare helps defend against odor and irritants. And it's the first and only pad with this pH proactive system that helps optimize the pad's pH. Just think of it as self-care for down there. Check out Kotex.com for more details on the all-new Kotex, completely redesigned to meet your needs. You asked, we heard.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Amazon Music has everything you want to listen to. Music, podcasts, and now audiobooks. All in one app. Amazon Music Unlimited. Audiobooks included.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.